Ben Bredesen is the owner and founder of Fat Bottom Brewery in East Nashville, Tennessee. He turned in his high-tech employment badge and decided to follow his passion for crafting beer, and he's never looked back. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join Ben Bredesen at his brewery, where he talks passionately about Fat Bottom's litany of beers. Bredesen also takes us back in time to the dawning days of beer as an integral and essential part of daily life. He also shares insights about derivations of popular brews, such as IPA and porter, and nuances of hops and yeast. Ben Bredesen. Tell us about your vision and how this happened. Were you a home beer maker?
Yeah, I was a home brewer for about 10 years, and I used to work in technology. And it just got to the point where I'd always wanted to have my own business. It was time to go out and do something. And I just decided if it wasn't beer, I wasn't going to be happy.
So it really was your driver. I mean, that's what gave you purpose.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically it. I love beer, and I couldn't see myself doing anything else. Yeah, a lot of the people I know in this industry they were well set up before. They were in a good career and doing something they enjoyed, but they finally just said, I got to make a change and I want to do this other thing that I love.
So it really was following your heart and your passion.
Yeah, it was. I looked at doing software or doing consulting or something related to what I had been doing, but I wanted something that was going to keep my attention for the rest of my life. And I realized that it needed to be that deep passion for brewing and beer and getting other people excited about beer too.
What is it? What's at the heart and the nut that gives you that, keeps you going and keeps you enthused?
The thing I love about beer is that there is so much complexity and depth coming from four very basic ingredients. To me, beers are more complex than wine. Not to denigrate what a vintner does, but they're taking the fruit of the field and they're fermenting it, and it can be wonderful. But with beer, you have this enormous variety of styles, and what you can do in the beer is so dependent on the geography and the chemistry of the water and what am I trying to get out of the hops in this particular beer. Four same things create this enormous variety from the lightest pale lager all the way up to an imperial stout. To me, it's just amazing.
Your lexicon, the breadth of what you make and what the distinctive characteristics are.
So we make 7 beers at a time here. We do have some seasonals that rotate. And we have a pretty good span. I mean, we're trying to appeal to a lot of people. Like I said, I want to get other people excited about beer in the way that I am. And so we make, obviously an IPA everybody likes. We have a red ale. We have a golden ale. We have a stout. And right now, one of the things we're really working on is trying to expand that line. We've been restricted in our brewery where a couple...
Physical space?
Physical space where one or two beers have sort of taken over the business.
Demand function.
Yeah, exactly. It's just demand. We just don't have a choice necessarily about what to brew. So right now, we're in the middle of building a new brewery across town. And as a part of that, we're going to be launching a sour program and creating a bunch of new styles and really starting to expand the things we're doing, getting back to the core of why I started the business.
So right now in your life, is everything sold on premise or are you distributing?
We're distributed, and we're actually, most of our sales are off-premise, meaning in grocery stores, convenience stores, which is pretty unusual for a brewery of our size. But we started canning about 2 years ago, and it's those two beers that sort of taken over the house. I mean, they've taken off. We move a lot of beer through grocery stores now.
So your number one grocery seller is what?
Our number one is our Knockout IPA. We didn't open with an IPA. We started making it about a year and a half after opening. It was one of the first beers we canned, and it just took off.
And literally canned, not bottled?
Literally canned. We've got our own canning line here, and we're doing 16-ounce cans.
Any thoughts of going back to the olden days with the old can opener?
To the church key style?
Yeah.
No, I think we'll stick with the tabs.
Oh, you'd be a trendsetter, dude.
Yeah, people would probably notice that for sure. No, we're pretty happy with the technology we've got now.
Let's talk random for a moment. IPA, as you know, the roots of that has to do with the British Empire. Tell us a little bit about where it came from and why it's still around.
So IPA is an interesting style. English IPA was originally brewed as a pale ale in Britain, and they began exporting it, sending it on ships to India.
You know, because it was a good shipper then, right?
Yeah, it was a good shipper, and part of that is because of the hops. Having an elevated hop level, hops are a natural preservative, and so that beer just tasted better when it got to India compared to other styles coming out of England.
So was it part of it a default aging process?
I'm sorry, say that again.
An aging process?
Yeah, a lot of it was aging. You know, they were shipping in wooden barrels, and so a traditional IPA is oak-aged. Nobody really does that anymore. Everybody's doing it in steel. But it is about that aging and that history in that beer. Modern IPAs were not aging because hops do taste better fresh, but that is where that style was born from.
Are you doing any oak barrel aging?
We are. So right now we're bourbon barrel aging a stout. And then we're going to, when we move to this new facility, blend that with some young beer and bottle it. So that'll actually be our first bottle release.
And your oldest beers, how long would you age them for?
The oldest beer that I made as a home brewer, I aged for about 2.5 years. And it was a dark, rich Doppelbock. So just a beer that lends itself to aging. A lot of beers that we have, that we put out into the market today, you want to drink them younger. They just taste better fresh. But there's certainly styles that age very well and taste better over time, like wines.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it's
full breath.
Yeah, it's, again, one of those things I just love about beer. There's so much variety and so many different things you can do to it.
Talk a little bit more about kind of the history and the roots of beer and the beers that you do. You know, even like the genesis of porter, I was told, had something to do with the porters in England.
Yeah, porter, the story is that it actually started off as a blend that porters in the English rail system would drink in the 1800s. Beer is fascinating. You've probably heard that archaeologists believe people settled down and moved from hunter-gatherer into an agrarian culture because of alcohol. They needed to be able to grow grain or harvest honey, and you just couldn't do that on the scale needed when you were traveling.
And they found archaeological evidence of that.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's still amazing. I mean, beer is magic, and the idea that somebody figured out that you could take this grain and ferment it and make something wonderful. It's kind of like the first person to eat an oyster. You know, who would look at that and think, I want to drink it? But they figured out it was good and figured out how to make it better and better over the centuries.
And if you think about it, you go back in time, you couldn't drink water. You had to live, survive. You had to drink beer and wine, or you died.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, particularly, you know, in London, as that city began to grow, people drank beer all the time. They understood it was better than water coming out of the ground. They didn't understand why, and it had to do with the fact that it was boiled before it fermented. So,
okay. So let's look back to the here and now and you and the things that you are most proud of that you craft. Some descriptions of your favorites, your babies.
My favorite, well, I love all my children equally, yeah. So I can't really pick one that's my favorite. But one of the things that we try to do here is to make all of our beers very well balanced. It's very easy to just pound a beer with hops, for example, and make a big IPA, but we really want to create balance in our beer and have some sweetness to offset that bitterness. And that's true, of course, all the styles we make, not just IPAs. That's really been my focus since we opened the brewery, is just approachable, well-crafted, well-balanced beers.
What are you known for? What do people first think of when they think of Fat Bottom?
So the bulk of our volume is the Knockout IPA, but I think more people recognize our Ruby Red Ale. It's more distinct. There's not a lot of American Red Ales out there.
The Ruby Red Ale, what defines and delineates that?
So a red ale, if you take an American pale ale and add a little more grain, a little more sweetness, it becomes an amber. You do that again, it becomes a red ale. So our red has this toast and caramel on the front end, some sweetness to it, and then there's hops on the back that balance everything out. So it's a mid-range style. It's not especially dry or sweet or especially hoppy, but everything works together and creates this complexity in the beer that's I find very enjoyable.
Sounds extremely drinkable.
Yeah, it is drinkable, and it's, you know, we sell a lot of cans of that, and I think it is the thing that most people recognize from our brewery.
You do a Guinness style, real dark, chewy beer.
We do. We have a stout called Bertha that we make on and off. It just depends on the time of the year. We also have a black IPA that's sort of basically a cross between a porter and an IPA or a stout and an IPA. So it's got that dark grain richness, the coffee, and then some hops in there too, which is unusual in a dark beer.
Do you like a Christmas ale like Sierra Nevada does?
We don't have a spice Christmas ale. We're working on a smoked pumpkin porter right now, but there's nothing we've brewed full scale yet in that vein.
And that would obviously only be available throughout the fall then.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're looking at, is having that as a fall seasonal.
And your total production, roughly?
We're doing about 4,500 barrels this year, which is small on the scale of a brewery, but is good for us. About 70% of that is knockout IPA, and the balance is 7 or 8 different other beers.
Perfect world, looking forward, where do you see yourself in the scheme of things 5 years from now?
5 years from now, we'd like to be a very well-known regional brewery. My end goal is to be national in scale. So, you know, we're looking to grow aggressively and just be recognized and be known as a regional brewery and eventually as a national brewery.
And again, this is your what anniversary? How many years?
We just had our 4-year anniversary, August 17th.
And right now, we're in Little Brew Pub. And it's not down the heart of town. Somebody has to hunt to find you.
Yeah, we've got our tap room here, and it is hard to find. We've got basically a restaurant, a beer garden, but you really have to walk through the brewery and know that we're back here, kind of stuck in the back of the building, hidden away over here.
Imagine word of mouth is a huge driver with you.
It is. We really try to focus on bringing people in from the neighborhood. We've got a lot of regulars who walk here in the evenings and hopefully tell their friends. And then on the weekends, we tend to get a lot of folks from out of town coming in as well, which is nice to see, right? Just beginning to get that recognition, start to spread the word.
And is Fat Bottom available in most of the restaurants downtown?
We're available around town throughout Tennessee, but only in-state right now.
Tell us a little bit about backstory on hops and grains.
So hops are fascinating. Hops, for people who don't know, they grow on a vine, and what we actually use in brewing is the flower of the vine. It looks like a little green cone, like a little green pine cone. And inside that cone are these resins and aromatic oils, kind of all the things that lend both bitterness and flavor and aroma into the beer. We were talking about history before. The addition of hops to beer is a pretty interesting historical story, at least from where I'm standing. Up until about the 1500s, what people used in beer was called gruit. It was essentially a spice mixture. That spice was essentially the first tax on beer. Each area in Europe had what was called the gruit right, and it was a monopoly. Typically, the church was the only organization allowed to sell gruit, and everybody had to use it in their beer. As hops came onto the scene, like I said, in the 1400s, 1500s, in Bavaria, the nobility there realized that they could use hops in brewing, and they could take that right from themselves. So the German beer purity law, that actually came out of basically a law saying, you will not use gruit anymore, you will use hops that I can sell to you.
Control of the marketplace.
Exactly. I mean, it was a political and an economic thing, and it's completely crafted what we do in brewing today, you know, centuries later.
One time, 150 years ago, they grew hops in California for the San Francisco brewers. There's even a town in Northern California that's still called Hopland today. And yet, as far as I know, hops aren't a big industry in California. What happened and why?
Yeah, there are some hop farms in California, but I think it's not quite the right environment for growing hops. Hops are very sensitive to their environmental conditions, how much sunlight they receive. So really the best quality hops grown in America come from Washington and Oregon.
And the best hops in the world come from, if you could, money no object, where would you get them?
I think Washington and Oregon, but people in Germany may disagree with me and say they're growing the best hops, and people in New Zealand disagree, but there are a lot of different options for hops out there today, and I give all the credit to the early craft breweries, I mean, Anchor and Sierra Nevada and Sam Adams, because when they started, they really didn't have options. I mean, hops were an industrial commodity, only big breweries were using them, and so they really had to struggle to go out and find new varieties and create new flavors in their beer, and the whole hop-growing industry and the ability for craft brewers today to use all these different varieties is really... it's really about what those early pioneers of craft were doing.
Today, you have quite a spice rack of choices in your hops of what you choose.
There's hundreds of varieties out there. And I kind of say hops are to beer like grapes are to wine, in the sense that there's like these varieties, and they're very dependent on where they're grown in the world, soil conditions, water, sunlight. And what that means is if we get two different crop years of a particular variety, we actually have to modify all of our recipes to make the beer taste the same. So we really are using a different ingredient year to year. That's one of the hardest things we do in brewing, is making that beer consistent year over year.
Can you talk yeast for a moment?
Yeah, so yeast is similar to hops. There's a lot of varieties out there. There's a couple labs in the U.S. that actually culture and will sell to breweries and home brewers. We use one main variety here in a lot of our American-style beers. We also use a Belgian source yeast for our Belgian Golden Ale. We use a German-style yeast for the Black Betty. And yeasts, they're all the same species, all the different yeasts we use, but they're all genetically somewhat different. And so they'll actually create different flavors in the beer. They'll accentuate hops in certain styles or tone down the hops in other styles. And the yeast choice, I mean, it is an ingredient choice, just like choosing hops or grain in the beer.
So again, you said it's the beginning, it's a very simple process as far as the number of ingredients in beer. It isn't complex.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's one of the sort of contradictions in beer. I mean, you have four base ingredients, water, hops, yeast, and barley. But there's so many things we can do with either different strains of yeast, different varieties of hops, different malt roasting levels on the barley, different chemistry in the water. And those things all affect the beer and what it's going to taste like when it actually gets into your glass at the end of the day.
Very cool. And one more thing before we go. In a sense, you're a whiskey distiller, but you just stopped the process too early. Do you ever think about continuing?
I have. Whiskey and gin in particular are spirits I enjoy. I would love to make those someday. But it is the same but different. Distillers they're very much concerned with how much alcohol is being produced out of the mash. They're not concerned with things like tannin extraction from the grain. And those are things that we have to be very concerned about in brewing. You know, they just have a whole different set of things they have to focus on.
Right, but at the beginning process, they're beer makers.
Exactly. I mean, that's the first thing you do when you make spirits is you make beer first and then you distill it.
So you could continue.
We could continue, but I enjoy the beer as it is. So.
Ben Bredesen, founder of Fat Bottom Brewery, thank you so much. What a joy to come meet you and visit.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Nashville, Tennessee. We've been visiting with Ben at Fat Bottom Brewery.
Ring out a song of good cheer. Now's the time to roll the barrel for the game.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdell, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
Roll it out, let's do the beer.